Just another quick announcement. I know I mentioned it last week, just to throw it out again in case anybody's free on Tuesday morning. The way that the morning's going to go on Tuesday, if anybody's free and you're not sure, in case this entices you a bit, session one is going to be guaranteed places of encounter for discipleships. Session two is going to be revival theology. And then session three is leading through revival and preparing for the end. So that's what Tuesday morning is going to look like. If you're free and want to join a few of us, that would be great. So we're John 15 this morning. So if we're talking the red letters of Jesus, and if you want to see the most condensed part of your Bibles that contain the red letters, it's John 14, 15, 16, and 17. We were in John 14 last week, and I think just want to follow on with what Jesus was saying. It's been a busy week. Lots going on. Judith has been more busier than me, and so when she came home during the week on Wednesday night, she had a busy day. House was noise. There's been noise everywhere, and she said, "Neil, can you just give me? Can I just have like 30 minutes peace and quiet making the dinner?" And so I went and took the batteries out of the smoke alarm. Flip me. Well, I didn't expect that reaction. Sorry, Bill. It was really a joke. John 15. So last week we were in John. We were in John 14. We talked about Jesus, these words of comfort he was bringing to the disciples. Don't let your hearts become troubled. He was preparing them for what was about to happen. So John 13, like we were familiar with John 13, where we were just around Easter time, where Jesus had this most beautiful, intimate moment where Jesus washed the disciples' feet. And after that, so some of the gospel versions will tell us that after that moment, Jesus took them out to the Mount of Olives. Like Jesus knew what was imminent, and so in the closing moments before he was taken to the cross, he brings the disciples to the Mount of Olives. This the usual I think it's Luke's version that says it was his usual place. It's whenever Jesus wanted to go and commune with the Father, see what the Father was doing, hear what the Father was saying. That was his usual spot with the Mount of Olives. And so this is where he brings the disciples to. This is what he communicates to them. As I think I've said this before, I every so often find myself wanting to know like what were the last words of like the most influential people before they died. Because it always feels like, and it's not always, sometimes it's silly, but sometimes what people say at the end is really profound, is something that they really want to communicate. And so Jesus knew that his death was imminent. He knew the cross was near. And so this dialogue, this discourse that he brings to the disciples at the Mount of Olives, it just is so important. And I know that I've probably shared some of these verses before. It's my favorite place to go. If you want to just fully discover the heart of Jesus's greatest desire, go to the place where he was almost wrapping everything up, I guess. And so I imagine that these words, John 14, 15, 16, and 17, continue to be really important for us, but I almost imagine that these words were still what the disciples were talking through. Even after Jesus had rose again, the disciples were still working through all that he had said. And I imagine often they went back to John, these verses, that these words that Jesus spoke to them before he went to the cross. And so as I say, last week we're in John 14, and I imagine they went there whenever they needed reminded that he was bringing comfort. He was bringing comfort to troubled hearts. And that the only way to get to the Father's house, where there is, where Jesus reminded them, there's plenty of room for everyone. The only way to the Father's house is through Jesus. Jesus is the only way to the Father's house. And so we quoted from Henry Nguyen, the language that he used was the house of love, where God resides. And he talked about the other house, of the house of fear. And so we sort of tried to encourage ourselves that that's where we need to get to. We need to move from that place of fear, that place of hate, that place of violence, the house of fear, as Henry Nguyen called it, to the house of love, where God resides. The only way that we can get there, there's only one way to get to that place, and it's Jesus, who is the way and the truth and the life. So let me read the first 12 verses of John 15. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, and while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You're already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burnt. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be given to you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. I am the vine, Jesus says. The Father is the gardener. I just want to touch on verse 2 for a moment. So I'd almost love to go around the room and see what your versions say. The 1984 version of the NIV, the one I just read, says cuts off. Some of your versions will say, every branch in me not bearing fruit, he takes it away. I suppose just reacted to that idea of cuts off. Maybe this is not the assumption that you make. I think it is something that I think is possible, that we read that words, you make a mistake, you get it wrong, you misbehave, you make an error, you're cut off. If you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're cut off. And so because that just did not feel, and as I've said this over and over again, but I think it bears repeating, forgive me if you're bored of me saying the same thing, but if it doesn't look like Jesus, if we're presented with a picture of God, it doesn't look like Jesus. I am trying to get into the habit of going back and taking another look. So if you're not bearing fruit, you're going to be cut off. There's something about that that just does not feel like Jesus or does not look like Jesus. And so I'm not going back into this to try and make it suit what I want to say. There's the closer to the original says that every branch of me not bearing fruit, he takes it away. And I haven't done this in a while, but I went into this sort of like, took a bit of a dive into this, take it away. And it's this word, a-i-r-o, 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 a-i-r-o. And that word actually means, no matter where you look at it through the New Testament, it means to raise up or to lift. And so what's fascinating, I think, about this is that there was a preacher or a scholar was doing a bit of work on John 15, and as part of his research, as part of his work, he wanted to engage with a vineyard worker. And so in speaking with the vineyard worker, that he found out that new branches, naturally, their tendency is to fall to the ground. The natural tendency is to trail down and to grow along the ground. And those branches that grow along the ground and trail along the ground, they pick up all the dust. When the weather gets bad, and it gets mucky, the branches get dirty, they get messy, and they get sick. And what was, again, what I found interesting was that the role of the vineyard worker was to go around the vineyard to look for branches that had got sick, to look for branches that had got low, that had trailed along the ground. They weren't bearing any fruit because they'd got sick. They weren't bearing any fruit because their natural tendency was to droop and to go low. And so the vineyard worker went and lifted up all of the branches, raised them up, cleaned them, and tied them to a trellis, tied them to something that would then cause them to heal, would cause them to flourish, would cause them to grow. There's something about that picture that just, for me, looks more like Jesus. Looks more like Jesus whenever we read that that's what the gardener does. He comes and he re-engages us to Jesus, lifts us, cleans us, does whatever it takes to cause us to bear fruit. We have reading that idea of cutting off, I just don't think it's right. And it's completely transformed how I just read those first few verses. That what the Father does is he raises up anything that's not bearing fruit. He comes along and he cleans it, he raises it up and entwines it round the vine. I just think that sounds more like God, that he lifts us up so that we can thrive. He lifts us up so that we can grow. And so that's not getting away from the fact that the next verse does tell us that he does prune. And that can be painful, that can be difficult. But I've just been trying to wrestle with this a wee bit this week. Because there's just times that I'm just so conscious of, my goodness, how much pruning that I need. And but as if we've been reflecting on this, I've just been sitting on this week. Just recognize how purposeful the Father is in pruning. There is real purpose in pruning. And so he takes away all the stuff that doesn't need to be there. Takes away all the stuff that doesn't need to be there. And so that's my question to you, as I've been asking myself, really provoked by some of this. Like, what is distracting you? What are the things, even today, even sitting in this room, it's inevitable. It's inevitable. I've done it already this morning. There's things that are going on that just, like, you can't help but be distracted by. Can't help but just naturally take your attention at times. And so I think it would be really helpful as we consider what it would be like to allow the Father to prune rather than resist. I think again, our natural tendency maybe would be to resist the pruning because it's hard to resist it because it's going to be too painful. But I'd love you to ask that question today. I'd love maybe even have the nerve to ask your spouse. I'm saying that because, like, there's probably, after this morning, I'm probably going to have a lot of stuff that I'm going to be told that I need to prune. Get rid of those jokes for a start. That will probably be one thing you need to prune, get rid of. It's distracting. It's annoying. Leave it alone. But what are the things that are distracting? Be bold enough if you can, to have those conversations with friends or family. What do you think is restricting growth? What do you think is restricting growth? And so I am up for being vulnerable, but like there's some stuff that, like, I feel like that question again has provoked some stuff that I'd encourage you to try to do as well. What do you think is restricting growth? And so the only response to this idea of being lifted up, the only response to this idea of being pruned, And it feels like if you were to do one of those, like the Mentimeters, whatever it is, if you were like to put up the word that dominates this passage that we've read, there would be some words that would be like what in and you and fruit. Well, fruit's pretty dominant, but remain is there. It's there 11 or 12 times. Just the dominant theme in this verse. And so the only response to what I'm talking about is to abide. It's to remain. And so whenever I try to go back to where what was happening in this moment, Jesus had gathered the disciples before he was going to go to the cross. All of this, I think, just seems to carry, everything that Jesus said carries real weight, carries real significance. But there's something about this being his last words, it just feels like it carries that bit more. It's what he wants them to hear. It's what he has at pains for them to hear. You need to hear this. And it almost touches a wee bit on what we reflected on last week. His invitation to the Father's house is for everyone, but it's not just an invitation to come and visit once a week. And so don't think I'm equating that with like church attendance. I'm not saying like, I'm not trying to make any sort of thing around making sure you're at church once a week. This is more about our prayer life as much as anything. Being a visitor won't help. The invitation, the call, what we need more than anything is to reside, to make home. Make home is the invitation. In reality, it's the only option. Well, it's not the only option, sorry, because you still have two options. It's the only healthy option. It's the only option that's going to promote growth. It's the only option that's going to provide health and life. And we just need to be reminded of it. Like, as long as I've been trying to follow Jesus, as long as I've been reading the scriptures, as long as I've been trying to develop all of the practices and disciplines, I still need to be reminded to abide. I still need to be reminded to pray. I still need to be reminded of all of these things because there's still something in me that just doesn't do it naturally. I find all other things to abide in. I find all other places to make home. And they're not always good and they're not always healthy. But my natural seems to be, and maybe you're looking at me thinking, what on earth are you doing preaching to us if like you're finding other places to abide? But that's what I do. There are other places to abide. There are other things to abide in. And that it just comes so frustrating because that at times seems to be my natural tendency. And so again, what does hinder this idea of abiding, remaining? What is it that hinders? And the challenge for that is that it's going to be different for us all. Be hard to like to succinctly put like wrap this into one or two things because I think if we went all around the room and you were willing to be honest and as you do that in your conversations later you'll find that what hinders this idea of remaining or abiding in him is going to be different for us all. I suppose there's a couple of things that we could think about is that maybe it's actually you just don't feel good enough to abide. Maybe you're one of those branches connected to the vine, but you've just got so used to drooping low. You've got so used to just trailing along the ground. You've just got so used to picking up all of the dirt and all of the pain that it's got to the place you just don't feel that you're good enough to abide. And I know that there's other things and there's other addictions and other habits, but there's just something about that just really grieves me. But there's some of us that maybe just our branch just remains low, it trails the ground, just don't feel good enough to abide. Or maybe it's even what we talked about a bit last week. Maybe you're the house of fear. You just got so used to living in the house of fear. That's where you abide there. Maybe it is bitterness. You're just so used to abiding. And bitterness, it's where you just keep staying, it's where you just keep visiting, it's where you just keep returning to. Maybe it's unforgiveness. And as you are if you're bold enough and you're willing to ask those questions about what is hindering, or asking what is distracting or what is restricting growth, I'd love that we were able to tackle this together. I'd love it that we were able to be bold enough and courageous enough to take this on, take it on together. The reality is that abiding in him, remaining in him, it requires a conscious effort. Real intentional effort. And the way that he is purposeful in pruning, the reality is we need to be purposeful in abiding. And the most remarkable thing is that he's always present. He's always present, even in the place of our low self-worth, in the place of holding on to bitterness or anger, or place of holding valid fears. He's so present. He's always present. And the invitation to abide is as alive today as it was when Jesus was longing for the disciples to take hold of this. I just can't help but return to Brother Lawrence. It's one of those, he's one of those guys that we reflect on often when it comes to this idea of being present, this idea of being the conscious effort to abide. And Brother Lawrence said, "I do nothing else but abide in his holy presence. And I do this by simple attentiveness and a habitual loving turning of my eyes to him." There's something simple, there's something about his a little book, if you wanted to read it, Practicing the Presence. And there's nothing groundbreaking in it. There's nothing, no huge strategy in it. It was just literally throughout his day, getting to that place as often as he could throughout his day, continually practicing, getting to that place where he just acknowledged that Jesus was present. And he turned his attention toward that. He became really attentive to that. And it did something incredible. And there's others that have done the same, just try to measure their days by getting to that place of whatever it takes, acknowledging, recognizing that he is present. And just as I finish, and I recognize that there's loads to unpack in the words of Jesus, and there's loads that we could say, but I just want to make sure that I say this last thing, because as we see the things that dominate Jesus's closing words and from John 14 through to 17, one of the things that dominates, and hopefully you'll never get bored of hearing this, is that you love one another. I don't think these are two separate ideas. Do this remaining and abiding in him, and also do this loving one another. I think it's not two separate things. Jesus even said, even before they went to the supper, he says, "This is a new command I'm giving you." The new command, base your life all around this, that you would love one another as I have loved you. And again, when I think back to some of the thoughts of the vineyard worker who was helping this author write his book, write his commentary around John 15, one of the things that he pointed out is that the branches, it can be hard to tell where one branch stops and another starts. Hard to tell where one branch stops and another starts. And I love that idea. Talked about just the intertwining of all of the branches. And I just am so convinced that is the heart. It's the heart of the Father. And it is what Jesus was, again, longing to communicate to the disciples, longing to communicate to us. The heart of the Father, and we see through the words of Jesus here, is that we would flourish and grow together. The branches are so intertwined that you don't know where one stops and where the other starts. And the reality is that none of us can do it alone. None of us can do it alone. And the other thing is, although I'm standing here at the front and the guys are going to come and lead us in worship, and they'll be, I suppose, seemingly in the central place, there is no branch has a central place. Not one branch has a central place. It's all flowing, all the branches intertwined, flowing from the one vine. And I just think that becomes so important, because then the challenge, the call to us all is those that make up this family and those that are part of this church community and even beyond, that we would do all that we can to abide there in the vine, where there's no one central place, where there is, where we're all intertwined. And we do all that we can to help each other abide there. And some of that will be tricky, some maybe painful conversations as we allow the pruning to take place. But I just felt really strongly this week that is what he's longing for us to do. And so I know the temptation is, let's just move on to the next sermon, to the next part of the week, and we can't avoid that. We're going to do that. But I'm grateful that the guys have another song prepared, and I just would love that in the last few moments we have of silence before the kids come back into the room, before we make our way for lunch, that you'd be willing just to ask some of those questions. And if you're up for it, some people will be at the back if you want prayer. At least at home, just commit yourself to some maybe robust conversation around this, because know this, he's not for cutting you off. He's not for cutting you off. He's for finding ways that will attach you to the vine, to make you fruitful and to cause your thriving and your growth. That's what he's after. But he knows that it's going to take us all doing it together. So Father, as we finish our time together, as we gather once more just to worship, God, will you once again make your presence known? God, we know that you're here, God. We trust, we believe that when you said that you would be present, that we trust that. So God, just for these remaining moments, will we be so attentive to that? And we allow you to do whatever it is that you need to do to make us more and more like Jesus, the true vine, the perfect vine. Father, thank you that as the gardener, you come to heal and to cleanse, to make whole. And we thank you for that. In Jesus' name, amen.